Come at the hour, come at the mothership, that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening and welcome to the program. John B. Wells in with you tonight for the third time this weekend, and delighted to be with you tonight on the program. Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, and special guest for the first hour, Joel Skousen. We'll talk about this nuclear thing. What's all this about Pantex? The country's only nuclear weapons assembly and disassembly plant. It's comforting to have that thing in your neighborhood, isn't it? Pretty big neighborhood. And it'll reach all of it if it were to tump over. And we'll discuss what's all this about an unreported nuclear weapon transport from Pantex to South Carolina. Lindsey Graham is in a tizzy over it, and we'll get Joel Skousen's take on it. Achtung, Achtung. Why do I say this? Well, it's the Germans. Security Week. Berlin. Thousands took to the streets in Berlin yesterday in protest against internet surveillance activities by the, yes, good old NSA and other intelligence agencies, and the German government's perceived lax reaction to them. The protest was organized under the slogan, Freedom Rather Than Fear. It's a good slogan. And demonstrators carried banners saying, Stop spying on us. And more sarcastically, thanks to PRISM, the U.S. government's vast data collection programs, the government finally knows what the people want. You know, the Germans have a very succinct way of putting things sometimes, don't they? Intelligence agencies like the NSA shamelessly spy on telephone conversations and internet connections worldwide, and our government, one of whose key roles is the protection from harm, sends off soothing explanations. On Thursday, newly leaked documents allege that both U.S. and British intelligence agencies have cracked the encryption that secures a wide range of online communications, including emails, banking transactions, and phone conversations. Over here, we're slightly more cynical. Most of us have known this has been going on for years, and it has been. The documents provided by former U.S. intelligence contractor Ed Snowden to the New York Times, ProPublica, and The Guardian in the U.K. suggest that the spy agencies are able to decipher data even with the supposedly secure encryption designed to make it private. So there it is. And there's more from Germany. Syria chemical weapons attack not ordered by Assad, says German press. President Bashar al-Assad did not personally order last month's chemical weapons attack near Damascus that has triggered calls for U.S. military intervention. This is from The Guardian. And blocked numerous requests from his military commanders to use chemical weapons against regime opponents in recent months, a German newspaper has reported, citing unidentified, high-level national security sources. The intelligence findings were based on phone calls intercepted by a German surveillance ship operated by the BND, the German Intelligence Service, and deployed off the Syrian coast. Bild am Sonntag said, the intercepted communications suggested Assad, who's accused of war crimes by the West, including Foreign Secretary William Hague, was not himself involved in last month's attack or in other instances when government forces have allegedly used chemical weapons. Assad sought to exonerate himself from the attack in August, in which hundreds died. There has been no evidence, this is a quote, that I used chemical weapons against my own people, he said in an interview with CBS. So there you go. And one last little thing here. Gregory Hicks, the former deputy chief of mission in Libya, who testified before Congress about the 9/11 attacks on an American diplomatic facility, believes he has been punished for speaking out about the administration's response the night of the attack. He said he believes at least two of the Americans lost that night could have been saved if the U.S. had responded in time. Quote, I don't know why I was punished, Hicks said in an interview with ABC's This Week. I don't know why I was shunted aside, put in a closet, if you will. He says he'll continue to talk about the attacks because, quote, the American people need to have the story of what took place that night and the four Americans who were lost in the attacks should be remembered. He also believes that former Navy SEALs Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty, who died 8 hours after the initial attack on the diplomatic mission, would have been saved. He's still on staff at the State Department, has not been reassigned to a post since being called back from Libya. In a statement to This Week, State Department said Hicks was not removed from Libya as a result of the statements he has made about the Benghazi attacks and it is working on reassigning him. I'll bet, like maybe Ice Station Platypus or something. All right, tell you what, let's do. Let's take our little break and get on it right quick with Joel Skousen. We're going to talk about this nuclear war. You know, Joel has been on the program a couple of times. It's been a while. It's been a little bit too long, almost a year. October 31, 2012, hosted by Mr. Norrie. And he's brought up his belief that one day there'll be a mushroom sprouting right here on our own soil. So let's get his take on that and several other issues when we get right back into it on Coast to Coast AM. Hang on. Joel Skousen is the publisher of the World Affairs Brief, a weekly news analysis service found at www.worldaffairsbrief.com. He is a political scientist by training, speaks multiple foreign languages, and he uses them in accessing information here and abroad, specializing in helping readers understand the hidden agenda of those that secretly control both political parties and the U.S. government. He also has a second career as the chief designer at the Secure Home Design Group, which specializes in helping people design and implement high-security residences and retreats. He's written several books in that field of security architecture, and he's back on the program. Welcome back, Joel. It's been too long. How are you?
It has. Thanks, John. It's always good to be with you.
Well, Senator Graham's in a twist over a potential nuclear threat right here on our property. So what is your take on this? What does it all mean? There's a lot of information flying around, but not a lot of intel.
Well, there is one group that does claim, Infowars.com claims they have a military intelligence source which said that there was a nuclear weapon unauthorized transfer from Dyess Air Force Base in Texas to Savannah nuclear facility in South Carolina. And they link that to the statements of Senator Graham talking about, it could be a nuclear holocaust there happening in South Carolina, but it really wasn't related. Senator Graham was trying to act the part of, frankly, I'll have to say it, a warmonger in this case, of pushing the case for war. He and McCain are the two Republican people, neocons, trying to push this war. And he was using the case of a potential nuclear or dirty nuclear bomb coming in a ship into Charleston Harbor that would create this nuclear blast that would target his state. But he was not, in fact, relating, I don't even know if he knows about this claim by, the so-called intelligence source. Frankly, there's been a couple of these people claiming to be intelligence sources who refuse to be named to talk about unauthorized nuclear transfers. None of those have ever led to anything. I personally doubt them because of the total NSA spying that we have. There's nobody that can get by with telling anyone about those types of things without being locked down immediately. The government is surveilling every telephone conversation. And there's just no way somebody can get away with telling this kind of stuff unless it's a purposeful piece of disinformation, which we find applying the right wing in the United States almost every day with disinformation about imminent martial law, imminent collapse, imminent bank failures. And while I believe, as well as anyone, that our government doesn't have good intentions long-term about, whether it's NSA spying or whether or not it's, making up dissident lists of people they eventually intend to take down, I think they have to wait for a major world war to do that, to justify that. They can't just start martial law, which takes hundreds of thousands of people, and expect Americans to take that, even with the economic damage that would do. So I'm very skeptical of these anonymous reports. Nobody can keep doing that week after week, month after month, without getting caught. Unless
seriously. Well, we're all just worn out from it. And we can't, maybe that's part of the plan, is to wear everybody out to the point that they're just like,
oh. Mentality that, it's meant to discredit what I consider true conspiracy facts and theories and muddy the waters with all kinds of weird stuff that people get upset over. And eventually people say, let's just forget about all this. Nothing's ever happening. And then it will happen someday. But there's method to that, and as I say, my job is not to say all is well. I'm not an all is well person. There's a lot wrong with this country. But I don't you know, want people running off scared, like a chicken with its head cut off, out of this false level of disinformation that keeps coming up.
Well, I kind of like the slogan that the Germans were using in their march in Berlin yesterday, freedom, not fear. And I just have the feeling, I mean, it's just a tsunami of stuff. It's like the Benghazi thing, followed by the IRS thing, followed by the NSA thing, followed by the FBI thing, and the Attorney General thing. And it's just insane, you know?
Love. Yeah, well, those happen to be correct. I mean, the government is spying, as you said in your introduction. I've covered in the World Affairs Brief for years now. The NSA has been spying consistently. It isn't just something that started with the FISA court giving them permission to do a little bit of metadata. It's been going on for decades, and it's all been illegal. And most of the disinformation coming out from the administration, admitting small little lapses here and there, or, you know, 1,000 mistakes here and there. I mean, it's just total. They're recording everything. I mean, it's an absolute lie that they are only taking metadata and that they only look at it. They're recording it all. They may not be looking at it. It's impossible to look at it all. But they're collecting not only the metadata, but building the list and keeping everything in storage that they need to look at it when they want to, you know, use it on anyway. That includes financial data, includes what you purchase, all your credit card information, all your telephone calls, every internet. It's all there. So I'm not optimistic about them ever changing. You know, they said that they were giving that up 10 years ago in the total awareness system with DARPA, and they lied. Not only did they not give it up, they pushed forward with, you know, everything they've been doing, and that's what Snowden has leaked. So I'm not buying what the administration says about this being a limited strike. They're already expanding the target list. I think the objective here, John, is they want to throw enough at Syria to force Assad to retaliate. Now, Assad has already said there will be consequences if you do this attack against us, when we did not, and I'm convinced they did not pull this gas attack on the civilians. I mean, what's to be gained? Assad's no fool. He knows that the U.S. is just itching for an excuse, you know, to say you've crossed the red line, you've used gas. There's no way for the military advantage of killing a few hundred people, let alone his own civilians that he has no reason to be killing, why he would use an indiscriminate weapon like gas, which can't distinguish, just defies all reason.
It's weird to me. It's weird to me, Joel. You remember when the U.S. forces took out Diem in South Vietnam, then got his brother in L.A. a short time after that, and then in we go. So it's not as though setting governments up is just out of our government's purview because they're so lily white and all. I'm just wondering, this looks like a complete setup, but anybody can see it. It just smacks of a setup. But why? Is it some sort of a precursor to getting it on with Iran or what?
Yeah, here's what I think is happening. You know, the U.S., it's no secret, the U.S. and Israel have been looking for a way to justify an attack on Iran, which is the main target. But the problem with attacking Iran is that Syria is allied with Iran, and Syria has actually the majority of the retaliatory capacity of this combination of power in attacking Israel with Scud and other more modern rockets, with chemical weapons. And I think the U.S. has chosen to go after Syria, eliminate it for whatever excuse. That's why they brought in Al-Qaeda. It didn't work. They haven't been able to take down the Syrian army, which is very well trained. And so they've been itching for an excuse to go in there and do this. They're looking for a chance. They're just daring Assad, go ahead and retaliate, throw a few rockets at Israel. Then we can come in and clobber you. We won't have to worry about convincing the American people about this phony gas attack. You'll be attacking Israel, and that's all the excuse we need. They want Assad removed. They want his missiles and all of his weapons captured. And hopefully, they're hopeful that Iran will come in and support Assad. So they won't even have to send Israel off on a preemptive strike. They'll have Israel and the U.S. responding to an Iranian retaliation as well. And I think that's what they're hoping to achieve by this.
Let me ask you this. Let's say that we're right. Let's just extrapolate a couple of scenarios. Let's say that we get I don't think there's going to be congressional approval for an attack. I don't see that happening.
Yeah,
but
I don't
either. Let's say he goes. well, the hell with it. I'll just do it anyway. So he does. So we, do Putin and Obama actually get along and it just looks like they don't? You know what I mean? It looks like they're adversarial in their relationship, but I wonder if they are.
Well, they are in this sense. First of all, both are puppets to a larger power structure behind the scene. Obama isn't calling the shots. He isn't making the decisions. He's got a whole staff of what I call globalists that have an agenda, and he's going along with whatever they say. Now, Russia has an agenda, too, and it is the New World Order agenda. They want to control the New World Order. But in order to do so, they know that eventually they've got to take down the West. So here's what Putin is playing, in my opinion. First of all, he's not ready to go to war with the United States. Foreign Minister Lavrov said clearly, we're not going to war with anybody. And Putin has given several signals that he's, in fact, going to green light the U.S. going in to Israel and devastating Assad's military. Here's the green light signals, in my opinion. First of all, he says to them and announced that he is not, he's putting the S-300s on hold. I predicted 2 weeks ago in the World Press Brief that those S-300s, even though Putin said they were anti-aircraft missiles and anti-missile missiles, would not be coming into Syria. In fact, they haven't been. Some of the components have been delivered, Putin said, but the rest are on hold. That's a green light signal to the U.S. that we're not going to put our top-of-the-line missile interceptors in there. And the second thing is, if Putin really wanted to stop this U.S. intervention, all he'd have to do is put two top-of-the-line Russian fighter squadrons into Syrian air bases, and not a shot would be fired.
That's what I'm thinking.
Is the U.S. wouldn't come in, and it wouldn't cost him a thing. So the lack of those two things, to me, indicates that Russia is not intent on saving Syria, but that his real intent is to allow the U.S. to show the world that they're really the bully of the world. In other words, Russia and China both need this evil empire reputation of the West to be built stronger. And so they're kind of goading the U.S. into doing, playing like they're resisting, and the world's saying, come on, Russia, you're the only one who's got the power to resist this juggernaut of the United States. Do it. And they're not going to do it. Just playing tokenism. But in the long-term strategic battle for the hearts and minds of the world, the U.S. is destroying its reputation, the defender of liberty, by doing this kind of intervention, especially if Obama goes in without congressional approval. It will seal the U.S. fate as the bully of the world, because we're even going against Congress when Britain acceded to Congress, at least for now, acceded to Parliament, and is not going in. Can you see this structure that Russia hopes to build as a future justification for war?
Yeah. All right, let's strategize for just a second here. Let's say the U.S. goes ahead and puts some iron on the target in Syria, and Israel's ready to go along with us at Iran. So maybe what we want to do is provoke a response from Iran. So let's say there is a response from Iran. So it's like, okay, let's go get Iran, and we do get Iran. What has been gained here then, other than a PR blemish for the U.S. and for Israel as well? Does this kind of action put a chill on the Palestinian initiative? You got a separate state going. What would be the point if we actually had to engage Iran after dumping some ordnance on Syria? What would, in your opinion, be the next scenario we'd be in a twist over, as we saw it come blowing out over every media news outlet? A confrontation or a chilling effect?
Yeah, the answer to that, John, is a little complex, because there's several levels of strategy that the U.S. is aiming at. In terms of a short-term strategy, first of all, Iran is the only Arab nation that is intent on building its own domestic weapons system industry. The only one. Everything else has imports from the U.S., Europe, or Russia, period. Iran's the only one going for its indigenous weapons system. It has to be taken out. They don't really believe that Muslims are the enemy of the world. We've brought in the Muslim influence that we have into Europe we've created this Muslim monster, you know, of social unrest. But we don't want them really to be a threat. We just want this to be a cover for an eternal war on terror. We can continue to, you know, undermine Western liberties and other things. But ultimately, the U.S. knows that the threat is Russia and China. That's why they're building huge underground bunkers. That's not for terrorism. That's not for a dirty bomb. Those huge underground bunkers that are being built are for an eventual nuclear strike in America that our own leaders know is coming. So look at this long term.
All right, hold on. I know it's going to a little bit of a stretch to ask you to do this. That's a good spot to leave it. So when we come back, let's take it up from the long term objective. Joel Skousen is our first hour guest. I repeat, it's been too long since we spoke to him, a brilliant strategist and a rational man. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Interesting, isn't it? The globalists would be closer to it, want to control. Control what? What will be left to control if the Chinese and the Russians get into a brawl with us? I mean, is this a biblical scenario? Are the UFO guys waiting for us to annihilate each other because they, for all their powerful technology, really can't? Do these globalists, do they just want to totally control everything left, even if everything left is not much? It's a conundrum. And we'll get into it a little more deeply with Joel Skousen in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, very seldom could one consider all-out warfare to be based on rational thinking, unless it was just barbarians coming over the wall and we can't talk to them, we don't speak their language, and there will be no negotiations. But picking up where you left off, Joel, the long-term, the powers that be are building these deep bunkers to survive an inevitable confrontation, conflagration, be closer to it, with the Russians and the Chinese. The Russians and the Chinese together against us?
Well, at least temporarily. I think that they're independent predator senators. The Russians and Chinese know eventually they'll have to take each other on. But right now they're in a temporary alliance building for nuclear attack on the West. They need an excuse to justify that attack. I've long said that I think that North Korea will be that trigger. That's the only thing to explain why we're going after Iran, who is actually a fairly rational, secular Persian nation that we've actually made more anti-American by our persecution over many years and allowing the Ayatollah to come in. We're the ones who kept him in France all those years, waiting at CIA expense to come in, and now he's supposedly our enemy. But the big question is, why is it that we give North Korea a complete pass? We've guaranteed no regime change. We've guaranteed them that no military options on the table. They're the most tyrannical regime in the world. They have nuclear weapons. They've said they're going to strike the West, and we do nothing. And yet we're bound and determined to take out Iran, who we haven't even proven has nuclear weapons. Now, I don't happen to think, John, that the Iran-Syrian war will turn into World War III. As I've long explained in my World Affairs brief, Russia and China aren't ready. They're giving no signs other than sending in some surveillance ship and a couple of military assets that don't have any defensive capability. They can't shoot down Tomahawk missiles. They can do offensive things, but I just don't think they're going to use offensive weapons and risk starting World War III before they're ready for it. I think they're at least 8 to 10 years out because of the need of rebuilding the Blue Water Navy. But the big thing about Iran and why it's crucial is not only that it stops the only Arab nations building an indigenous weapons industry, but it also takes out China's primary foreign oil supplier in the region. We already took out China's oil supplies in Libya. That's one of the main reasons for ginning up that so-called Arab Spring. It had nothing to do with democracy. There's no democracy there in Libya yet, and there never will be. We took them out because we dislodged 30,000 Chinese oil workers. And this matches the kind of strategy that the globalists who were active clear back prior to World War II did in provoking Japan to strike the United States. We now find through Robert Stinnett's book, Day of the Seed, about the Pearl Harbor attack, that the Roosevelt administration had a six-point plan to provoke Japan into attacking. One of those main points was to cut off all access to British oil in Indonesia and force them to basically go out and attack the West in order to get back and attack British colonies in order to get back their oil supplies. And that's exactly what they did. So it looks to me like we're in a dual provocation stage. That is, we're first of all building up our rationale as the bully of the world through all these interventions, and we know it's not for democracy. There are secondary reasons for controlling oil, but that's for strategic purposes in this Third World War scenario. We're setting ourselves with a ring of military bases that will allow us to interdict oil supplies to China, which desperately needs them to prosecute a war, and ringing Russia as well. So I see these as long-term strategic reasons. And don't underestimate what I've said about this preserving North Korea as a trigger event. I think that's the real trigger event for World War III. It's there at a moment's notice. If they launch 200 and they've got 2 million men under arms against 50,000, first-line South Korean troops and a mere 13,000 frontline U.S. troops, the only way that we could stop an attack from North Korea into the South would be use tactical nuclear weapons. And that would, in turn, hand Russia and China the excuse to nuke preemptively in a surprise attack the West. Now, let me address the larger question that you raised about what would they gain by this devastating attack on America, even if they survived our own leaders in the bunkers that they're building. And it's not just government bunkers. Even retired CIA and DEA are building, you know, smaller residential-type bunkers in their expensive homes in Aspen, Colorado, and other places in the Rocky Mountains. I mean, these people who are leaving government somehow know there's something big coming, and it has nothing to do with, you know, the phony war on terror that the U.S. keeps exacerbating with these interventions. But in point of fact, John, it won't be a holocaust that destroys the world. The nuclear winter is something put out by the anti-nuclear lobby. In fact, the U.S. knows that it is not in the Russian and Chinese war plans to simply devastate all American cities. They have nothing to gain by putting themselves out as the bullies of the world by killing all of civilization. They know that the Russian and Chinese plans involve only hitting military and communication targets. And that means that probably a dozen cities like Seattle, San Diego, Colorado Springs, Omaha, Nebraska, where the military bases are integral with the city, you know, would be hit, and we'd have major devastation in those cities. But the rest of the United States would be relatively unscathed except for fallout. That's a serious thing, but it isn't. People will survive. There would be an EMP strike preceding this nuclear attack by about 20 minutes, and we'd lose all electricity in the country. And that would cause major panic. But I think the U.S. knows what the Russians and Chinese intend to do is to strike U.S. military targets so the West feels unprotected, that they cannot retaliate, they cannot prosecute the war, and then blackmail the rest of the West into submission. So they preserve the economic engines with both the Chinese and the Russians need to survive economically. Now, I think our globalist leaders intend to come out of their bunkers and say, oh, the Russians and Chinese deceived us. We didn't know this was going to happen, which is a hell of a lie, a big lie.
Oh, yeah.
They said, but you see, our only choice now, they'll drum up, is that we have to join in a militarized world government to prosecute this war. It's a magical conflict creation scenario, could have been written only by the devil himself. So diabolical, so long-term in its vision, realizing that Americans and even Europeans won't give up their national sovereignty for a global government unless they're forced to by the exigencies of a nuclear war that the government says we cannot win unless we join together and fight this as a world. They'll call it probably the League of Nations, and they'll finally exclude the communists, which they should have from the original United Nations, but they didn't for conflict creation purposes. And I think that they'll talk everyone in. I mean, who's going to resist? Save us. Seriously. It'll be 9/11 multiplied 100 times. The mother of all terrorism is a nuclear strike on our military. And we won't be able to say, go to war with our military. Our military is down and out for the count.
And so we don't have a military.
That's right. And
okay. You know,
just as Pearl Harbor can clearly be laid, the day that will live in infamy is laid at the feet of Roosevelt, who acted like the savior, but in fact knew it was coming, failed to warn, had broken the codes, and even induced Japan to strike.
You know, for years and as a kid, I would hear the older guys talk about that.
Doing the same thing. They're disarming, John. We're going to take down our nuclear missile forces to less than 300 in a couple of years, while the Russians and Chinese are building massive new numbers of ballistic missiles and warheads.
Joel, I heard for years when I was really a young kid, but I had ears and I was listening. I heard many of the older guys say that Roosevelt knew that the scrap iron that we were selling to Japan was being made into a war machine, as if it were really pre-planned. And so while this looks so confused, it almost appears to be a play as we go along. This really is a complex strategy. And a minute ago, you said this could only be concocted by the devil himself. And I mean, in USA Today, there's a thing, an article about some see biblical visions of doom and Syrian trouble. I mean, even quoting a passage from Isaiah, "Behold, Damascus is about to be removed from being a city and it will become a fallen ruin." Is this a biblical scenario being played out? Because I tend to agree with you. What group of people is so smart that they could lay out a scenario this complex and execute it?
And it's been in under execution even since World War One. It was clear that World War One was created not by the Archduke Ferdinand. It was being prepared before then. That was merely the trigger event to get us a world government. And it didn't work then. It purposely gave us the Treaty of Versailles that was so onerous that it guaranteed the Germans would come back again. It gave us World War II, and we did get a global government in there, which incidentally was being voiced in communications within the government 4 years before the United Nations was formed. We have language in government documents talking about the United Nations and how we're going to use it during the war. Now, we didn't get a militarized government. See, we didn't get a military power. Everything is permissive. It's going to take one more world war to get us into a mandatory participation of a world government with a military teeth to it that I can tell you won't ever give back sovereignty to the nations. The reason I don't think they will, I think the West plans on talking China into betraying Russia during halfway through this war so that we've got a two-front war against China, just like, you know, Russia, who initially had a pact with Germany to take over the world, then were going to betray Germany, and Germany preemptively betrayed, you know, Soviets on the pact. But it's the same play again. If China betrays Russia and comes into China, Russia will be taken out of this next Third World War. And guess what? Then China's the new Cold War enemy. And the global government can have an excuse to say, oh, we don't have to. We can't disband this world military that we've got because we have China as the threat. And they will have armed China just like we armed Russia. They will have given China a great deal of the Eastern thing as we gave Russia half of Europe. And we purposely slowed down Patton because we had this secret Yalta agreement to let Russia have half of Europe. It was treasonous to liberty.
As yes, that's said, absolutely
we
correct.
We won the war, but lost the peace. And we did it on purpose.
So it's economy rotation as well as superpower status rotation. Do we know the names of any of these people, these individuals or families that will actually be the ones to emerge and go, oh, wow, we didn't see this coming, but we can help you. We'll pull all of this together. Do we know who they are?
You know, it's the best kept secret in the world.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Unfortunately, with the NSA controlling all of the surveillance and the CIA and the dark side of the controlling, we would never be allowed to find out and get the legal evidence to prosecute. But I can tell you this. Henry Kissinger is one of those. General James Jones, who was Obama's national security advisor in 2012, at the Munich Security Conference said these words: at the National Security Council, we have a hierarchy. We get our daily marching orders from Henry Kissinger and Associates, passed down through General Brent Scowcroft and Sandy Berger. He said those very words. It's proof of a conspiracy, because Henry Kissinger has no legal authority to be even giving advice to the National Security Council, let alone daily marching orders. And on the CFR website, that copy of that speech is still posted. You can read it for yourself. General James Jones, head of the National Security Council, saying we get our daily marching orders from Henry Kissinger. So he's one of them. It's a blatant admission. Now, he's not there anymore. General Jim Jones was released. We got Tom Donilon on, who's Obama's handler on a foreign policy basis. He's the one who tells Obama what we're doing. He's the one giving the orders to Obama about Syria that we're going in no matter what. And it's only lip service to Congress that they are playing as if they're looking for their approval. Email to congressmen running 400 to 500 to 1 against the war. I just don't think Obama's going to pull it off. But as I say, what better way to build a continued excuse to Russia and China that we're the bully of the world than to go against Congress and strike Syria anyway?
Do you think we're
going to... I think it's going to be a limited one to start off with. But they're
but you think it's going to go?
They want to induce Assad to respond. So now there's no more debate. We're in a war with Assad. And it's going to end up, in my opinion, as a large, complete Middle East war. It'll suck in Hezbollah. It'll suck in, you know, Syria and Iran. And it will be the U.S. and Israel that will devastate those countries. I don't think they'll occupy. That would be too unpopular, but they'll devastate them so that they can, in fact, control the Middle East. But it's going to certify our reputation as the bully of the world.
Got a compound question for you here. Now, you skillfully skirted that regardless of what we say on the program, some people are seeing biblical parallels here. Do you see a biblical parallel here, or not really?
I don't mean to skirt that. I'm just saying that it's awfully
I was joking somewhat, you know.
It's awfully hard to read prophecy like an open book. There's a lot of curveballs. There's a lot of double entendre. There's a lot of where Isaiah says something, it means something in one period, and it also means something 40 generations later, and it's very difficult to nail down. I personally don't think this is Armageddon coming up. I think this is a prelude to it. He could well have seen the destruction of Damascus, and this may well be it, but I still don't think it's going to lead directly to World War III, because Russia and China are showing every sign that we're not ready yet. Now, that's why they've got surveillance ships in there. They learn more by allowing nations to be taken down by eavesdropping on our military communications and breaking our codes and other things, and testing weapons. In the Iraq war, they tested some anti-tank weapons against ours, a pencil-drilling anti-tank weapon that killed one of our Abrams tanks. It was just devastating. Had our American tankers really scared, just like a pencil hole drilling through and exploded on the inside. And so they're going to use this war to their purposes, but I don't think this is World War III coming.
Joel, I got to ask you this real quick. We're down to about 2 minutes here. I didn't mean to step on you like that, but let me ask you this. Are you suggesting that we're sort of being put in the position that Japan was put into in its buildup of its military prior to the outbreak of World War II, that we're not ready to engage them yet?
No, I'm saying that Russia and China aren't ready. So what is the preparatory antagonism. We're doing the preparatory cutting off of oil so that China will harden its resolve and maybe quicken its schedule. You know, I think the globalists have been trying to induce a third world war for a few years already, and Russia and China, no matter how much we disarm, still are afraid of the secret weapon systems that we've got. And I think we've got some in space already, but they won't use it to defend this nation. They're going to let these bombs fall on our nation so they can drum us into a new world order, and then they'll pull these weapons out, these secret weapons that we've been developing to prosecute the war. That's what I think is going to happen.
I've got about 1 minute left before the computer. Computers are such a nuisance. Let me ask you this: Do you believe that we may have a considerable contingency of operatives inside the country already?
Operatives for who?
Well, for whoever wants to do us harm, do you think we have either real or fabricated terrorists already in place inside the country?
I don't think we have a lot. I don't think how that's they're going to take down the U.S. I think the Russians are going to use preemptive nuclear weapons. If we had real terrorism here, you know, they'd be coming across the border every day.
That was my point.
Borders in Mexico. Most of the terrorism we have and most of the prosecutions are FBI provocations just to keep America convinced we've got a war on terror and to divert us from seeing the real war that's coming up between Russia and China. And you see the U.S. downplaying the Russian. They never issue a report every year about the Russian threat, only the Chinese threat, and they always downplay it.
We got to go, Joel. Thank you. We'll be back in touch. This is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks, sir. Appreciate you.